become death, the destroyer of worlds.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Epic fails of history.
Our greatest glory is not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall. Confucius.
Welcome back to Epic Fails of History. I'm Eric Slater, and this is part two of our Civil War discussion with my co-host Chris Carroll and his brother Brad.
Okay, so I don't think any conversation about failures and blunders and or epic fails during the Civil War would be complete without mention of Special Order 191. Because this is a story of epic failure on both sides. Like simultaneous incompetence on both sides. So leading up to the Battle of Antietam in September of 1862, which we had touched on earlier with the trivia question, the bloodiest day in American history, that was the first time that Robert E. Lee and his army had invaded the North. And they were in Maryland. And he had devised, just like most of his strategies and battle plans, a masterful battle plan. And what had happened was the camp of General D.H. Hill, which was one of the subordinates of Thomas Stonewall Jackson, when they struck camp to leave, Stonewall Jackson had hand-copied out several copies of Special Order 191 to give to his trusted battle commanders. It detailed the entire Confederate battle plan, troop positions, and supply chain.
Oh, God.
When the Union Army scouts came upon the abandoned campsite, they found an envelope with several cigars wrapped in a letter. And they took the cigars. And when the scout happened to look at the letter, he noticed that he had a copy of the entire Confederate battle plan, troop movements, and supply chain. At the time, also deserves his own category of epic failure. The head commander of the Union Army was General George McClellan, a man known for his plucky confidence and swagger, who people would follow, but was an incompetent general, at least in this case. And so he actually exclaimed after being worked over by General Lee multiple times, he said something to the lines of like, with this, even I can't lose. something along those lines. So that wasn't the exact quote, by the way, but it was something similar. That was the theme, the spirit.
Yeah.
So they had all of the troop movements, all of that information from the Confederate Army. So as it was, what could have been this blitzkrieg style invasion was stymied a little bit, but McClellan's forte was being too cautious, and he had too much respect for General Lee. And always thought that he was being outsmarted even when he wasn't. And so even though they were able to then fight the Confederate Army at a ground more to their suiting, it ended up being this very, very bloody stalemate. And there was no winners, no losers. And he ignored a lot of the intelligence he had because he kept half fearing he was being lured into a trap. And then he did not pursue the fleeing Confederate Army. So they had every bit of their battle plan in hand to wipe out the Southern Army and leadership and win the war. And then due to his own incompetence, he was too scared to actually commit full on to countering that intelligence. He was so scared of Robert E. Lee that he thought that he couldn't shake the nagging feeling that it was a plant. And so even after they attacked, then he was always worried that Robert E. Lee was a genius of deception. And so he always made all the Union generals think he had far more men than he did.
Hmm.
And that was the case for McClellan. He thought that he was actually outnumbered by a force that he had by about 2-1. And the South was able to escape, win several major victories, and then that eventually culminated in the Battle of Gettysburg the following year. But to summarize, Union Army finds the entire battle plan and troop movements for the Confederate Army, tentatively takes advantage of it, and then does not follow up on the wounded enemy, allowing them to escape.
Can I ask, as far as the scouts that found the cigars, you know, wrapping the maps and everything, do we know why they were in that envelope in that abandoned cabin? Like, were they accidentally left there?
Yeah, it was accidentally.
So someone just like,
they forgot them. This general forgot them.
Just amazing stupidity and luck at the same time.
Yeah. We forgot them.
It's so nice.
See, now that I can almost understand McClellan's hesitancy there, because it is, it's such low-hanging fruit. It's such a gift.
He had been smacked too many times. And Lee, he was Charlie Brown and Lucy with football. He had been
it's more like
too many times.
Yeah. Is she legit not paying attention this time? Like, was she distracted by that noise over there, or is she with me again?
It's really more like Bill Clinton in the nuclear football and losing.
Did you know about that?
Yeah.
What's that?
When Clinton was president, they lost the briefcase with the nuclear codes on it?
Yeah.
Oh, holy.
Yeah, that was the thing that happened. Yeah, I don't think it was declassified until recently, and didn't really make a big deal about it. But it could have been bad if someone.
No, to be fair, the second they lose those, the
I'm
codes
sure.
are remotely scrubbed.
Oh, of course.
So it wasn't like there was ever any real danger.
Oh, I'm sure. But just
and like, other than
still is funny.
The maybe 2 minutes between when they went missing and they realized they were missing, or however long that was, if whoever ended up with it knew what to do with it.
Yeah.
Doomsday for the whole world.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is, I mean,
fire everything.
It happened more, if I'm not mistaken, it happened more than once. That's the crazy
thing. Yeah, it's happened numerous times. I think they lost it under.
Well, Jimmy Carter.
Carter.
Yeah, he left it. He left the codes in his jacket at the dry cleaner.
Yeah, the dry cleaner. Good old Ezio. Didn't know what he had there.
Can I hammer just a couple quick other battle-related
things? Yeah. Okay. Well, definitely.
And then we'll touch on Lincoln and then Johnson and the Reconstruction.
Yeah, before we
wrap up. On the topic of epic fails in terms of battle tactics, I think any list would be incomplete without somebody who actually named a facial hair preference, General Ambrose Burnside, who replaced sideburns were named after him. He had giant mutton chops.
What?
Yes.
I didn't know that. I knew who Ambrose Burnside was.
He's ridiculous looking, by the way.
No, I know.
That's amazing.
You know what he looks like? He looks like the biggest dork in the world wanted to look like Wolverine in the way the comics used to draw him.
Yeah,
and they had to wear the Confederate hat. And he's still got the ridiculous hair and a huge poof. He does. He looks like a total idiot.
So I'm just going to preface this statement because a couple of the things I'm going to cover here in the next few minutes all tie back to this one maxim. One thing, the greatest battle general of the era, Napoleon Bonaparte, found out to his demise at Waterloo is... if you've tried to attack the flanks and not succeeded in turning the enemy's position, you're probably better off repositioning, retreating, regrouping, whatever the case. But just like Napoleon at Waterloo, when you launch a full frontal assault into a heavily fortified position, it's probably not going to end well. This lesson was not learned by the Civil War generals, even though that was part of the curriculum at West Point, where they all went. With the table set for this tale, General Burnside was promoted to head general of the Union Army after McClellan's failure to pursue Wounded Lee's army after the Battle of Antietam. He replaced him with General Burnside, and he had a great idea to try to deceive General Lee, good luck, and launch an attack on Richmond, which at the time was the Confederate capital. So his plan was to ferry his army across a river, outside of Fredericksburg, Virginia, with lots of wooden rafts, after trying to deceive them through false intelligence and troop movement where they were going. They get to the river, and the wooden rafts that were requested did not show up for 7 days, at which time the Confederate Army found them.
Oh, God.
And waited across the river for them to cross a river, and took all the high ground behind a natural built stone wall. General Burnside decided to proceed with the battle plan at this point, and they crossed the river and decided to engage the Confederate Army. At one point, they found the Confederate Army had very naturally strengthened their core position behind a stone wall on top of a hill. And what a steep hill. What does General Burnside do? He orders
a charge.
Seven consecutive charges up this hill at the Confederate position. Seven consecutive charges that fail one after another after another after another.
That's so insane.
Actually, the third by the most, by the end of the day, should have shot that too.
By the end of the day, there's 12,000 dead Union soldiers.
Oh my god!
On this hill,
it's horrible.
I'm sorry to laugh. I know it's like 150 years ago, so it's not like too soon.
So,
I don't mean to make light of anyone's death.
Yeah.
That's
insane.
Seven.
That's insane.
No, no, and he knew what was happening. And the soldiers were protesting. And they were, basically those days, if you were a soldier and you protested the orders, they'd shoot you on the spot.
Yeah.
So you have two different kinds of leaders that'll do that. You've got like the old 1970s and 80s Russian generals that would fight in Afghanistan and would be like, literally have to be inhuman in their decision making because they knew like every single one of my guys is about to die, but I have to think of them as cannon fodder and I have to use them as that way. It's the only way I'm going to have a chance of winning. Yeah. And then you have the idiot ones. And that generally is what happens with a lot of American generals is you get these guys that kind of like, well, their dad knew this guy or their dad's a politician and they like, you know, kind of fail up the ladder and they end up as a general without ever having any like, especially the guys don't have like the field experience or like battle experience. Mm-hmm. They end up commanding guys in those situations.
Which a lot of these guys did. A lot of these guys, a lot of these bad officers, they bought their commissions.
Cause their families had,
and they just, and then since they bought into the high commission, they were able to get promoted upward or through political connections.
Well, because the military at the time was kind of a stepping stone to political,
almost everything. Yeah,
I mean the only reason Grant, who was a terrible politician,
was president,
just like an overrated general. The only reason he ever became president was just because of his name.
Yeah, because people associated him with the win of the war.
Yeah.
Even though he didn't really win anything.
Just like if the Confederacy had won and kept their independence, Robert E. Lee
probably would have
could have done anything in the world he ever wanted.
Yeah. It was like George Washington, even though he's like. He's the equivalent of like a football team that goes 1-3, but his one win is so big.
Yeah.
By the way, real quick, wonderful failure on the part of the Continental Congress for Revolutionary War. Do you guys know about George Washington and his income during the Revolutionary War?
No.
So as the loyal patriot, he said he declined a salary. They offered him a salary and he said, I can never accept a salary. Mm. Instead, just pay my expenses. And he went out and lived like a king. Went up like the equivalent of like hundreds of thousands, if not more, of living expenses.
Oh, so that's the deficit we're still trying to pay.
Yeah. After he declined a much lower salary, he was like, no, I can never do that. Just cover my living. Fucking baller.
Brilliant.
I know that at one point he was essentially offered the position of King of the United States or King of America.
Yeah.
And, and I'm sure it's a paraphrase. It's probably not even really something he said.
Yeah.
But, it's attributed to him at least where he said essentially like to become King of America would mean the death of America. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people who don't feel the same way. They're not talking current. Well, maybe, but talking about a lot of different presidents we've had that
think. Yeah.
So that was the Battle of Fredericksburg, a monumental defeat for the North, and immediate relief by Lincoln of Burnside as his commanding general. He replaced Burnside. We're not done. He replaced Burnside with Joseph Hooker.
Oh, God.
Hookers are named from Joseph Hooker.
I know.
Because he kept such a large camp following. He wanted all his soldiers to have access to prostitutes all the time.
Wow.
So his camp was riddled by venereal disease, and he would party so hard at stops that the camp would be so hung over it would delay their movements by days at a time.
So you wanted to be in Hooker's regiment. Odds are we're not going to see a lot of action. So this will be days behind the fighting.
This was the battle leading into Gettysburg. This was the most impressive legacy victory for Robert E. Lee in the South. So the Union Army had almost 100,000 soldiers, and they were stalking a Confederate army that I believe was maybe around 60,000, 50,000. So numerically very superior. Everyone was very scared of General Lee at this point, though. They thought he was borderline wizard with all the maneuvering he was able to do. And so General Lee did, for the second time, he did this at Fredericksburg too, violated the basic tenet of warfare at that time, which was if you are faced with a numerically superior enemy, you do not split your force. And Robert E. Lee trusted his commanders on the ground, such as Jeb Stuart, the commander of his cavalry, Stonewall Jackson, this brilliant tactician on the ground. So what he did was he split his force into three. He sent his cavalry circling the entire Union army and then cut Stonewall Jackson and his men into a second so they could do a pincer attack and encircle the Union army with like barely half their soldiers, which they did. It ended up being the Battle of Chancellorsville, a monumental victory for the South. So not only was Hooker just outmaneuvered and slow, but then in addition to that, the epic failure piece of things comes in. He was leaning against a pillar during the battle. The pillar was hit by a cannon, the vibration of which gave him a concussion and threw him insensitive to the ground.
Oh my God.
And then he was completely senseless and useless and unable to command his army for the rest of the battle. So officers on the ground were trying to make their own decisions. The North ended up being routed and retreating. And so a vibrating column giving the Union commander a concussion helped also shape history at the time. And then another.
That's so ridiculous.
This stupid. This leads in, yeah. Following the theme of brilliant Southern generals laid low by their own, that battle set the scene for, after the battle, General Stonewall Jackson, patrolling his picket lines, was shot by a young frightened soldier in the dark of his own army, who saw movement and fired, even though Stonewall Jackson and his company did the friendly fire, like the hail, the signal they
thunder, had. Lightning, or whatever.
Yeah, whatever their signal was. And he shot him. Stonewall Jackson's arm was amputated.
Oh,
and then pneumonia set in, and he died. And so Lee's best battle commander died, and some of the leadership they needed on the flanks in the Battle of Gettysburg, where they just narrowly failed to turn the Union flank and unravel the army, was where Stonewall Jackson would have been.
And can I put it real quick that if you never really considered what a Civil War era amputation is, imagine a zombie apocalypse amputation, and that's you're halfway there.
Yeah.
Because basically what they would do is they'd give you like usually a boatload of liquor if they had it available, or opium, or whatever the f*** they had, morphine, if it, I don't even know if that was available at the time, but usually liquor or a stick to bite on.
Mm-hmm.
A bullet. They usually
And then they would use a bone saw or a hacksaw or any kind of saw they had.
Shit, maybe.
They'd basically have someone hold you down.
Yeah.
And just saw that freaking limb off.
They would leave a flap of skin at the end.
Yeah.
That they cut inside.
Mm.
And then they'd cut through. And then they'd tie off the blood vessels. And then they'd bundle up the stump so they had skin they could tie over the end. It was truly horrific.
Yeah. And in really unsanitary conditions.
Oh, yeah, yeah. At
best.
Hey, here's maybe the best epic fail of the whole war, by the way. Even more than the bad tactical decisions and leadership and the bad doctors, the deadliest killer of Americans ever in a short window of time was diarrhea.
Yep.
Yeah.
They all got like typhus and all these camp fevers.
Yeah.
And they would have diarrhea and die of dehydration.
Well, those camps, man, the prison camps were horrifying. I mean, dudes were literally sleeping on the ground in mud and I mean, basically sleeping on the ground in mud and like excrement, and, like horses were everywhere and they're like sleeping right. There is zero chance you're not getting something while you're there. You're getting ringworm or you're getting infections or you're getting fever, or you're getting flus. I mean, you're probably getting all of it at once.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, like, you're not getting fed. You're probably just under the sun all day.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's brutal. A lot of dudes died in those camps. A lot of people. If you went in there, odds are you probably weren't. Mm. And it's not like a concentration camp. It's not like they were, like,
no. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they weren't the greatest conditions in some places. I'm sure there are some that were horror stories. But
no, yeah, the main military prisons for both sides.
Pretty awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was, but there was some movie, and I remember it interested me enough where I looked up some of the stuff about it.
Yeah, there's a movie about one of the southern camps.
Yeah, and the guy gets his head. You have to wait your turn for like haircuts. And
there was another one. There was another one that had a maybe even worse reputation for the opposite, and I think it was in Ohio for southern soldiers and stuff. Like, they were bad.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah, well, there was no Geneva Convention or anything like that. So it's like, if you're a prisoner...
And no oversight.
Like, no, like zero oversight. If you're in charge of this prison, you're God.
So for a lot of people, for a lot of the soldiers and officers at the time, some places the officers got a little bit better treatment. Some of them they didn't.
Worse.
But when after it became known what was happening at those places, it was said for some of them the families didn't lose hope until they find out like
they where were they were. Yeah,
yeah. And that's where they were like, they're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Start.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, I don't remember what movie it was, I'm sure you've probably seen it, but like this one dude who's in the camp, because there were so many people crammed in there, they only had one barber. So guys that hadn't been able to shave or whatever in a long time are getting their hair cut, and it's all full of mud, gunk, and they'd go to get it cut out, and they'd be like, you know, weigh like pounds because of all the bugs and crap in your hair and your beard, and it's on your face, it's in your mouth. Yeah, you're getting sick for sure. At best, you're getting sick. So probably the most famous name associated with the Civil War is the face on the penny and the five of Honest Abe. President Lincoln.
The real splinter.
Yeah, he's like probably one of the three or four most well-regarded presidents in American history. But he has like probably the coolest backstory of any president. most people don't know this, certified vampire hunter. but before he was president, like he was a straight up badass, dude. Like before he was president... You know, big, kind of tall. I don't know if he had some weird, like, pituitary deficiency, like almost Andre the Giant, but just never to that extent. But he was kind of known for being, like, really strong, like almost inhumanly strong for someone as tall and skinny as he was. But he also kind of sucked. Like, credit where credit is due. He never gave up, and that's kind of was always his mantra. But he failed at... He kind of failed upwards. He pulled a George W. Like, he just sucked worse and worse at everything. And everyone was like, oh, he sure is trying. God bless him. We'll give him more power. But he lost his eight or more nominations that he ran for. He lost elections. He lost re-elections. He lost, in addition to losing, he lost two, like, career kind of jobs. And he inherited massive debt from a failed business venture. So he kind of was... You know, striking out on all counts.
It was just one thing after another.
Like, yeah.
It's kind of surprising that he didn't become like some bum on the street. Yeah. Instead, he became the president.
Yeah. The president thing is kind of where things take a weird turn. But I mean, he was, you know, kind of an accomplished wrestler just because of his like freakish strength, like chimpanzee strength. And he was actually one of his speeches, some idiot was heckling him, and he literally tossed the guy out.
Yeah.
And in my mind, and I know this isn't possible, but in my mind, they're in like a courtyard or whatever, right? Like a town square. And he's up on like a little stage, and the guy's heckling him, and he just comes down and grabs him and just throws him out of the stage. Like he goes like 30 feet.
Yeah,
he's dead. Or off screen, and generally fast. And then gets back together. 7 years ago. You know, he's probably most famous for the Civil War era after everything he did. And you can talk about the motivations behind what he did and, you know, why he fought the fights that he fought and everything. There's a lot of interesting, you can have whole episodes just on his life.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, obviously.
He's a complicated individual.
Yeah. I mean, just one thing I'd like to add.
Individual.
Yeah. Kind of just like a tidbit more than anything. It's not really appropriate of anything. But Robert Todd Lincoln, son of Abraham and Mary Todd, after the assassination of his dad, was actually present at both the assassinations of James Garfield and William McKinley. So his father was assassinated as president, and then he was there for two other presidential assassinations. To the point where somebody ever asked him like if he would consider going – to another presidential event. And he was like, fuck no. His actual quote is, no, I'm not going. And they better not ask me. Because there's a certain fatality about presidential functions when I am present.
To the point about Robert Todd Lincoln, Edwin Booth, brother of John Wilkes Booth, who was not involved in the plot and disowned his brother after the assassination, before Abe Lincoln's assassination, Edwin Booth saved Abraham Lincoln's son Robert from serious injury or death on a train platform in late 1864 or early 1865. Essentially, he had started to get knocked in front of a train and Edwin Booth grabbed him and seized him and pulled him back onto the platform and away from the train. And so the brother of the man that assassinated his father saved his life shortly before the assassination.
That's nuts, man. Yeah. That's crazy.
That is insane.
Talk about
that. Is actually, and yeah. He knew who he was because he was a brilliant actor.
Right.
So yeah, Abe Lincoln's son saw him and he's like, oh, Edwin Booth saved
him. Yeah. Weird fact, John Wilkes Booth is actually in Lincoln's inauguration photo.
Wow.
It's pretty eerie.
Really?
Yeah. So I think it's worth mentioning the fact that Lincoln is bookmarked by two of the worst presidents in American history probably makes him look even better. Lincoln spent his presidency fixing the disaster that Buchanan left him, only to have Andrew Johnson come in and start breaking things all over again. When you talk about bottom five presidents, he's definitely in.
Yeah, I would say for sure.
A real
Franklin Pierce.
Yeah.
So Andrew Johnson is so right, just all around and he was like just one of those guys. Like, kind of get the feeling he wasn't just bad at being a human, but he was really bad at being a politician too.
Sure.
And just kind of probably through circumstances of birth or familial relationships, got to where he got.
Yeah.
His acceptance speech when he was named as Lincoln's vice president was apparently so bad that Senator Chandler called it a drunken, foolish speech in which Johnson's incoherent rambling went way over time and ends. And think about this, ended with him shouting, I kiss this book in the face of my nation, the United States. Before proceeding to make out with the Bible. I don't know how many red flags you need.
See, this is what I hate about today's day and age, is these people get weeded out.
Yeah.
Because of
before
all the
they get to those stages.
Can you imagine if we didn't have access to any of this,
yeah.
And somebody was elected president, on stairs being sworn in, like, just started speaking in tongues.
Yeah.
And like
I swear to President
drinking from a hip flask.
Yeah.
Like just this crazy.
It's just like there's an inauguration with, like, hip pistols.
Yeah.
With, like, a bandolier.
Yeah.
And you're like, ah, crap.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a blind vote. You got to pick them just by name.
That's what I mean. Like,
at this rate, I would not be surprised.
Could it be any worse? Could it really, truly? So, just to kind of old screaming like Bible kiss. When Lincoln was assassinated, I mean, it's such a huge blow for the country.
Oh, for sure.
This guy that like kind of held everything together is essentially
the
replaced.
Worst possible moment too.
Yeah, and it's like
right before the climax of the play. What a terrible moment.
I know, man. He never found out about whatever. All right, so like you lose your leader, right? And you replace him with like possible replacement, you know. It's like I'm trying to think of an analogy that matches, but it's like, all right, here we go. You lose Harry Potter and you replace him with Ron Weasley.
No,
we're all dead.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, basically, like we lost a great leader and we're replaced with like a drunken toddler.
Yeah,
who is whereas Lincoln was more progressive, Johnson is the opposite.
Right.
So Johnson. Like one of his first acts as president is to attempt to veto the Civil Rights Act. So any progress that had been made, he's like, no.
Yeah. He just wanted to turn back the clock. But after everything that had happened, there was no going back.
Yeah, Congress overrode that. And one of the very few times you can say, go Congress.
Yeah.
He was very sympathetic to like the Southern Rebellion cause. And he's often cited as one of the main reasons that Reconstruction after the war was such a big failure. And you know, because of a lot of
Yankees,
because of a lot of his actions, and not, I don't want to place the blame for this solely on him because that's a cop out.
Right.
But a lot of the actions that he took made certain that African Americans may have been freed from slavery, but they would be looking at a lot of a brutal and pretty unequal treatment for the next 100 years.
Well, Reconstruction too. I mean, more than just a race thing. Like the whole point was trying to rebuild the Southern infrastructure.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
To bring them back into the fold of the country.
Exactly.
And instead, if you haven't heard that term carpetbagger, I'm sure you have. But yeah, instead you just had shady businessmen coming from the north.
Stealing land and trying to make money.
Yeah, and the people of the south were in many cases terribly abused. And, you know, and most of the guys coming down here were not people that had fought in the war.
No.
Oh, of course.
They were just trying to be high and mighty. Yeah. And, you know, they're a bunch of crippled soldiers and widows and landless people. Yeah, it was as much as the war, it's just a very, very, very big black eye in our country's history.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just kind of one of those deals, I think, when you have, like, a show at leadership, it kind of trickles down all the way down. Yeah. Like, kind of the creeps come out of their hiding hole a little bit more.
Yeah.
And this dude was such a monumentally leader, following such a tremendous one, that in 1868, Andrew Johnson becomes the first United States president to be impeached. Now, he's tried under 11 articles of impeachment, and he's only acquitted by one vote. I mean, that kind of sets a precedent for he was the first bar setter for, like, wow, it can't get any worse than that as president. And then, you know, about 100 years later, maybe Nixon's like, hold my beer. So, yeah, Andrew Johnson has my vote for one of America's bottom five presidents. I just want to point out one more time that Florida had only been a state for a few years before they seceded. And then tried to come back like, nah, it's cool, man. Hey, baby.
Everything's good.
It's like Florida as a state acts like hashtag Florida man.
Right.
Like, it's like the state has a – it's like Jersey and Florida, just these – cancerous sores in the country that kind of like bleed into the areas around them a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like South Park with the Jersey. It's a Jersey thing. Oh.
So I got to ask, do you think a situation like this could ever happen again with our current?
No, absolutely not. And so with just like everything, as much as people want to think otherwise, every conflict nowadays, while it's blown up on social media, those same, just the visibility of everything prevents it from escalating.
Agreed.
Because everything has a spotlight on it. So that same spotlight is like my least favorite thing of living nowadays. Like, being like, it's just social media and that type of thing, the 24-hour news cycle. But at the same time, that keeps everything accountable. And that's why these things can't happen anymore, because there's too much pressure from every angle.
Right.
On everyone to do that. But in addition, I always find this funny. there's a very small portion of the state of California that wants to secede.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Texas too,
yeah.
Yeah, and coming from the South, would be like, be careful what you wish for, because you're not exempt anymore either, little piece of California. Do you really want to be invaded and conquered?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's what would happen.
They'd be like, okay, we're going to grant you autonomy. And now guess what? You're a foreign soil in the United States.
Surrounded entirely. Yeah.
All the military bases in Nevada and stuff.
They unleash all the wonders of Area 51.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen Independence Day. It's a documentary.
No, I didn't, but I saw its sequel.
It's a documentary.
Independence Day Year.
Independence Night.
They really should call that.
We will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
You know, my final thought for me on everything, and the whole reason that I was drawn to the Civil War was as probably like a 7 or 8 year old kid in a school play in South Carolina, in Columbia, South Carolina, I was able to play Robert E. Lee in our school play called The Sandlapper Review. It was a review of the history of the state of South Carolina. And, that made me just start learning about him. So I said, if I'm going to play him, I want to know about him, even though I probably had like 4 lines. And the more I read about it, I just found it so fascinating, because this was literally a war where you could have a father and mother at home in one state, in one technically country at the time, and have their 5 sons all fighting for 2 different countries and potentially 4 or 5 different armies scattered around the, mostly in the South, of course, the United States. So you literally had battlefields where blood relatives were fighting against one another passionately.
Man.
And there's even instances of relatives encountering each other on the battlefield. The last thing for me, which I find so interesting, the high water mark of the Confederacy is the furthest advance point from Pickett's charge, the famous failed charge from the South at the Battle of Gettysburg on day 3 that ended the war. Or ended the battle, I should say, which in turn eventually ended the war. So General Armistead of the South was one of the leaders of the charge. And he's actually famous. He made it famous in that charge to try to draw the attention to himself and away from his men. He took off his hat and stuck it on his sword and was waving his hat around on his sword to be an icon for his men to follow and also to draw attention from the enemy. In a battle around the cannons, he was shot. His request from the respectful soldiers who respected the bravery of this general was he be taken to their leader, because the leader of the position he was charging was his best friend. And so he died a day or two, a couple days later, in the tent of his best friend, who was the general that he was directing the desperate charge against. And I just find that so insane. And it just triggered this passion in me to learn more about it. Just the fact that we literally had brother versus brother, family versus family. And, you know, luckily, you know, everything worked out the way that it did. That the country's still strong and whole, but it's just so bizarre. Just such an epic failure in every conceivable way.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, where you asked if this could ever happen, I don't think it could, at least not anywhere close to the way that it happened this time.
Yeah.
And I think that it's important to know that, like, you know, there are always going to be disagreements, along with how the country's run. Yeah, keep in mind, there were people that thought we shouldn't be fighting the Nazis. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, we look back on that now and we go, well, yeah, of course we'd be. But no, like, they were killing people for years before we decided, like, all right.
Yep.
We're always going to have some shady leadership, whether or not you think that's the current guy or the last guy or the guy before him or the next guy or all of them.
Yeah.
You know, that's personal choice and personal preference. That's not what I'm talking about. The thing is, like, we're allowed to disagree on things, with the 24-hour news cycle and social media and everything, it feels like everybody's just so divided. But the fact is that that's a minority. You've got very vocal minorities on both ends of the spectrum, and they get so much attention that it feels like that's all there is.
Yeah.
Is that there's this huge gulf between two opposing sides, and that's not the case.
Yeah.
The case is that most of us are in the middle, and we just sit there quietly and shake our heads. Or talks amongst ourselves about how stupid the rabble-rousers are on either side. Disagreements don't automatically mean that, like, war is coming. And the fact that we all disagree on stuff and we, however you feel about leadership in the last 12, 20 years or whatever, like, oftentimes it has been divisive.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that anything like what happened here would ever happen again. I don't see that happening. I think deep down, too many people are too patriotic for it. Even if they disagree wholeheartedly with how things are going, it's almost like you're fighting with a family member in a way and someone else gets involved.
Yeah.
And then you both turn on another person. Like, you know, I know, like, if he and I were in, like, a huge argument and someone else, like, started getting involved, we'd turn on them probably quickly, you know?
Well, and two, it's, like, kind of impossible to take on the U.S. government at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Five branches of the military.
Yeah. You know? Not only that, but the gap, because of the amount of money allocated to military spending and everything. I mean,
you're not going to do much damage.
Are you going to have some farmers go up against the United States military?
Yeah.
Come on, dude. Okay. Even if the military is just on foot, they're going to get smoked.
Yeah, yeah.
And they ain't just on foot. they got robots that'll kill you now.
Yeah.
The robots have pet robots.
Yeah, They're building Decepticons, essentially.
Dogs that bark and shoot bees out of their mouth.
Oh, Michael Bay.
That's Mr. Burns, dude. What are you going to do? Release the hounds or the bees? Or the hounds with bees in their mouth, and when they bark, they shoot bees at you?
So, Brad, you got any shout-outs or plugs for this episode?
Hi, Amy. I hope you don't think I'm a total nerd now.
Far too late for that if you're listening, Amy. One thing I do want to mention real quick is Epic Fails Book 3, Not So Great Presidents, is now available to order on Amazon.
And make sure to check out books 1 and 2 while you're there, which are all...
Yeah, anybody If you're listening to this podcast and have not read the books, they're awesome and you should read them.
Thanks, man.
You can check our other blog out and our other podcast out at comiczombie.podbean.com. You can check our other podcast out at comiczombie.podbean.com. That's podbean.com. You can check out the other website at comiczombie.net.
Thanks, guys. Till next time.
Stay tuned to Epic Fails of History.